back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. An artist this week is April McNee, who is the Exhibitions and Gallery Coordinator for the Embroiderers Guild New South Wales there in Sydney, Australia. And we interviewed April a year and a half or so ago. And so we get to learn what's going on at the Embroiderers Guild there in Australia, and all their exhibits and so on and so forth. Before we get to April, though, we're very fortunate this time to have two sponsors for this show. And the first sponsor, a new one for us, is the Embroiderers Guild of America. And we're really, really glad to have them with us, sponsoring several shows between now and the end of the year. And if you followed any of the live shows, you know that Vaughn and I have become at-large members of the Embroiderers Guild. We went through that website. We've talked about it more than once. Went through their website and looked at what their offerings are. And they have just really, we think, turned that Embroiderers Guild into something new and fresh. And so we jumped right on it and joined. And we're really glad to have them sponsoring us online classes. They have a lot of free projects. Vaughn has talked more than once about the online classes she signed up for. I haven't signed up for any yet, but coming up. And just really refreshing what they're doing with the Embroiderers Guild. And then I call your attention to three projects that they have coming up. Beginning Brazilian Dimensional Embroidery with Judy Caruso. And that's a creation, a stitch sampler with beginner-level dimensional stitches, including bullion and cast-on stitches. Registration for that ends August 31st. So you got a couple months on that one to get signed up. Then another one is with Marcia Mickler, the Embroidered Quilt Block. And that covers patching embroidering on 8-inch square quilt block. It's an introduction to the technique of using embroidery in quilt making. And that registration ends July 1. So you need to act quickly on that one. But sounds like a fun thing. And especially if you're a quilter, this is a good way to combine two techniques, two hobbies. And then Hidden Trellises with Marilyn Hazelwood. You'll stitch trellising background and use a variety of stitches to incorporate flowers into a project. And registration for that ends August 26th. So a little time on that. So check those three out, but mainly go to egausa.org and just spend some time. You'll find a really exciting set of offerings from the Embroiderers Guild, and definitely go to that gallery section and see what people are doing. It's pretty amazing stuff. It'll hook you in, but set aside some time if you do it. And then our other sponsors, always glad to have Sassy Jack Stitchery with us this one too. And reminding you now, July 5 is the start of our Debbie Rowley Royal Garden stitch-along, and 15% off kits at Sassy Jack's. And now on July 5, Sunday afternoon, we'll celebrate Vaughn's birthday by starting Kim and Vaughn and I. We'll all be doing a live show starting the Royal Garden. And if you're doing the project with us, it'll be an opportunity for you to get off on the right foot, ask any questions, and have success right out of the gate, especially if it's your first time doing county canvas work. Then also from Kim at Sassy Jack's, I call your attention to her beginning counted needlework project that she's doing with videos, and that's the box heart design. But she has several videos already to help you get started with charted canvas work. And now her shop is open. The shop is open for curbside service and appointment only shopping starting July 1. And then also part of that, the shipping rate is now $4 as a flat fee up to $50 order, then free after that. And international shipping is $15 flat fee. And then also you'll want to check out the Learning Stitches series. That's quite a series of classes and a tremendous book to support it. So if you're interested in that, the book alone is worth it. I can assure you that. But check that out. So SassyJackStitchery.com, and thanks to Kim, and thanks to the Embroiderers Guild of America for sponsoring this show. And now we will go on to chat with April McNee. April McNee from the Embroiderers Guild, New South Wales. Hi, April.
Hey, Gary. Nice to speak to you again.
What's it been, 2 years?
Year and a half. Something year and a half? Around that. Yeah.
Long time. So good to hear from you. Yes. And you reached out to me. I was really excited when you said, hey, can we do one? You bet we can.
Yeah.
Darn right.
You didn't scare me off last time.
Yeah. I think that was probably what made me feel best was I didn't scare you off. Yep. So for those who don't know, the Embroiderers Guild, New South Wales, April is the exhibition and gallery coordinator. And we talked with you, and then now I forgot who was the other person we talked with.
Our president, Wendy, when she was president last year.
Yes, Wendy. And so that's a look back on WeTalkFiber.com about a year and a half ago, April and Wendy, and you can hear that first chat that we had. That was a lot of fun. You guys are in great shape in terms of the virus, but you've been through the ride here. And I got to believe that you guys have been altered in some way. So talk about what has happened. I mean, you had to shut the doors for a while. Did you start online classes? What happened with you?
I mean, same as everyone. Everyone's been affected. We've been very fortunate here in Australia in that we just locked down hard fairly early on in the game. So we haven't been too affected in terms of actual numbers, which is great. But of course, everyone's been inside and not allowed to go out. So that's meant that we have, we closed our building for quite a few months. And we had, you know, postal service going to anyone who needed stitching supplies. So we, you know, we were still in the office sending things out to everyone at home. Yes, of course, classes were cancelled or rescheduled. Our courses were stopped for the time being. A lot of them are going to start up again next year. And the gallery was closed as well for a while. We're just starting to reopen now.
Now, here in the States, we've had a real surge of stitching activity, mainly because people are at home. Did you experience the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a huge surge of people looking for even just a hobby or something to do, or people who'd always sort of been interested in it but haven't had the time to get started. So, yeah, that was definitely a thing here as well.
And that's interesting. So you had people who get me started, huh?
Yeah. So we sort of realized that this was a thing, and people would even phone the office being like, hi, I want to start embroidery. What do I do? And so one of our which is a good question to ask.
Right.
I think. And so one of our lovely guild tutors, Margaret, she put together a sort of a getting started pack, and she put together beautiful instructions and just going really like back to basics. Like, here is how you thread a needle. Here is how long your piece of thread should be so you don't get too tangled. So, you know, just really just trying to get people going so they can start experimenting and figure out, you know, where they want to go from there.
Okay, so what does that kit look like?
It's literally got, you know, instructions on 6 different stitches. And, you know, and the basic instructions of how to get started, bits of fabric. We've got sort of given enough fabric to put together a little like iPhone case or a pencil case. But the idea is that they can just experiment, you know, stitch fabrics on, try different stitches and just really get started. Very straightforward.
So more of a doodle cloth thing than a project.
Definitely. Yeah. Just purely to get them practicing the stitches for people who've just like never picked up a needle before. So
that's a great idea.
Yeah. It's been good fun.
Yeah. And then, of course, I assume very inexpensive to so that's not a barrier.
No, not at all. Exactly. It's just, you know, getting it out there as fast as we can, really.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Seizing an opportunity like that to get new people in. And of course, you know, you hope that even if half of them show up at your doorstep, that's going to be a real, real plus.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we all like stitching, so we just assume everyone else should like it as well.
Why not? Yeah.
Why not?
Yep. So then supplies, I mean, you say you're shipping things out. Supplies been fairly steady in terms of getting them, or has that become a struggle?
Fairly steady. We'll run out of a few things or a few colors, but we've been fortunately had, you know, fairly well stocked to begin with. So it's been okay. And it's meant that if people are just like, oh, I really need a hoop or these glasses or something, we can, or a book that they've been looking for, we can post it out to them, which is good.
Yeah.
Our post service is very overrun though, with everyone ordering things.
Yeah, I think that's the case all around the world there. Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
And of course,
they're dying. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Right. And they're limited in what they can do, and the whole thing just, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So that, yeah, and it, of course, it's always, there's always one color of thread.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because there's a couple of colors of DMC that I know are just almost non-existent at the moment.
Highly coveted, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone's hoarding them with their toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I thought about looking to see if I had any skeins of, I forget what the color was. There was one. I should look it up and see if I am holding gold.
Yeah, exactly. You know, auction that off on eBay.
Yep. So what are the stitching trends these days? Are people doing a lot of cross stitch, or is it a pretty mixed bag?
Definitely. I mean, the guild here in Sydney has always been a very mixed bag. Some people love a traditional cross stitch. I'd say a lot of our guild members are very creative, and they don't like following patterns, and they'll do their own thing. So it's hard to pick a trend, I would say. You are getting a lot more of, you know, younger stitches picking things up from Instagram. And that's normally just a sort of very basic surface stitchery, thread painting sort of style. And I think they're sort of learning just, you know, through social media, really. And so a lot of friends even have started picking that up as a hobby. So I suspect that will sort of become a bit more popular.
That's really great, because I think I know we've experienced that, particularly with cross stitch here, in that we have a lot of young people getting involved. And
great.
You know, 2 years ago, I think we would have gotten together and had concern for the future of the hobby in some areas, but it's really thriving, and it's young people, and that really is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely seeing a revival, which is the silver lining, perhaps, of lockdown.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. The now, have you guys ramped up online activity, or have you did what you have serve the needs?
Well, we'd love to keep pushing towards online, you know, courses, and we've been sort of getting towards that, but obviously COVID came so out of the blue that you've sort of been playing catch up a little bit. So we've had guild tutors who are happy to offer mentoring or tutor, you know, over Zoom, which is really good to kind of help people grow creatively. But otherwise, we sort of thought, you know, yes, we want to push towards online, but let's not reinvent the wheel. And so something that we've been doing for, goodness, like over 30 years is a course we run called the Creative Correspondence Course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's a 3-year course, but there's, you know, years 1, 2, and 3. And it's people with some background in stitching, but basically people who want to learn new stitches, really sort of stretch themselves creatively and, you know, apply the stitches in new ways. And so that had started at the start of the year, as it always does. But after the lockdown hit, we decided that we would open it up to another round of applicants, or, you know, students, for an April intake as well, so that people who have now got all this time on their hands, you know, they're locked behind doors at home, could do the course as well. So it's every 2 months, you get a whole parcel delivered to your doorstep with instructions, all the threads and fabric you need, and then you send that back to the guild, and a tutor will mark it, give feedback, and sort of work out kinks with you. So it's a really well-established course, and it was great to see a lot of enthusiasm for that April intake as well.
Okay, so you were able to just maximize an established course then.
Exactly, yes. So it was already a thing, but it just seemed to be exactly the right thing for the right moment, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Now when if I take that course, do I get instruction, augmentation as I'm going along, or is it follow the instructions, send it in, and then get feedback?
It's follow the instructions, send it in. It's talking you through it, obviously, those instructions, but you also have tutors that you can get in touch with if you're stuck.
Yeah. And is it a project or a series of projects? How does that work?
Series of projects that sort of, you know, you'll learn a new stitch, or you'll say, okay, here's the stitch we're going to tackle. You know, here are some sort of troubleshooting techniques, and we're going to apply it in this way. And it's great because at the end of the year, we have an exhibition of all the coursework people have done over the year. And
oh.
so it all comes back to the gallery and I get to see it all. And you have them all up on the wall. And it's fantastic to see what people have done with the same project, the same stitch, and how, you know, creatively they apply it in different ways. And there are some really fantastic works that come out of the Creative Correspondence course. So that's, yeah, really great to see.
That's fantastic. Now, you guys really encourage people to be creative, do their own thing, not just follow a pattern.
Definitely. And like, you know, everyone loves a good kit, a good pattern. There is absolutely, you know, nothing to be sneezed at there. But we definitely are quite a creative guild, I suppose you'd call it.
Well, it's good because I think everyone should work toward that at some point. And
and that was sort of our sort of founding principles. One of our founding members, Margaret Oppen, was really pushing towards a more contemporary, more creative stitching. And so ever since we've had every other year, we have a big sort of competition called the Margaret Oppen Competition, and there's a cash prize. And that's really encouraging members to create a new piece on we give them a theme every year, and they create an original work in whatever sort of technique they want. And that's coming up next October. But it's again, this really pushes people creatively, and that sort of was the founding principles of the guild here.
Yeah, yeah. Do we now use this time, or you guys are almost through it, to develop? Have you had a chance to develop new things for the coming months? You know, it's that always, if boy, as soon as we get an afternoon, we're going to do that or we're going to do this.
Yes,
yeah,
definitely. It's actually been in some ways quite nice having the time to sort of get ahead in some areas. I've taken the chance to repaint the gallery.
See right there. That's worth it.
Roll my sleeves up. Yeah, was getting a little bit shabby in a few corners. So it's now looking beautiful and fresh, ready to reopen. It's meant that we've had the time to get together a really good run of exhibitions for next year, 2021, and it's looking like it's going to be a fantastic year for us. Yeah. So that's been great fun putting that all together.
Yeah, see, to me, that when things like this happen, that's one of the silver linings is you not only just get the afternoon you've been craving, but you might get 2 or 3 days to really sit down and work on some projects and develop them and come up with new ideas, and it can be refreshing.
It is, yeah. It's nice not to feel like you're behind the eight ball all the time. You're actually ahead, you know. You're
You get first you have to catch your breath, and then then you can actually work ahead. Yep. So let's talk about those exhibitions, because you have a whole schedule through the year, and of course, you just had to shut it all down then, right, Cold?
Yeah, pretty much. So, and of course, the difficulty was we didn't know how long the shutdown was going to be for, and, you know, you guys don't know, nobody knew, and so we were sort of tentatively scheduling things for the second half of this year, but actually we were, again, we were a lot better off than we expected we were going to be. So galleries can open as of this month in Australia, which was a bit of a surprise, but it meant that our big exhibition that we usually have a big winter festival. I think when we spoke to you last time, it was the Festival of Samplers.
Mm-hmm.
And this year's it was going to be the Festival of Lace, which was meant to start about now. But we had already rescheduled that to the start of next year. So we were a bit at a loss when they said we could reopen. We were like, oh, we weren't expecting that. So we'll be reopening in August, and we've moved a lot of the exhibitions to next year. So yeah.
Yeah. Because now, you know, and of course, we have to orient ourselves here. It's winter for you as we're getting into the heat of summer. And now, is winter normally your busy time in terms of galleries and exhibitions?
Yeah, it is. Mostly because, you know, and again, this is Sydney, so it gets very hot in summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, winter's in some ways an easier time to do things. People are less worried about traveling, especially because we have a lot of members, you know, who live quite far away. And so, winter's often quite busy for us.
Yeah.
It's a very gray, rainy day in Sydney here.
Yep. Now, now that we've had this virus thing, and you guys have worked your way through it, Have you changed things with your exhibits in terms of offering more online? Have you altered that at all, or what is what you were?
Yeah, we definitely will. In terms of, we always sort of shared, you know, images from the exhibition online or on the website, but it was never a focus. And so when we reopen in August properly, I'll make much more of a point of really documenting the exhibitions, putting together exhibition catalogs so we can mail them out to people who are interested with all the information about the pieces. So those kind of things we can definitely do more of now. And now that there's more of a need for it, whereas previously, you know, people came in to see us. So right. That will definitely be happening.
Well, see, that, you know, that excites me because here a couple, 3 weeks ago, I talked with the ladies at the Royal School. And and with all the things they're doing, I think we're so positive because they're opening up the Royal School to the world because of online access. And when you talk about enhancing your online exhibits and then having a publication for each one that I assume we can any of us can buy, you know, that starts to give us access to something we've not had before.
Yeah, exactly. It's making it a lot more global and accessible in some ways, which is great. And it's been very fun. I think everyone's sort of obviously been a lot more on social media, but I've loved, you know, watching what everyone's up to. And we've been doing a thing called Work in Progress Wednesdays when people, you know, send us what they're working on and then we'll share them on our Instagram story. And it's just been really fun kind of discovering that community, you know, even though we're all, you know, in separate houses. Right. That embroidery community is still getting together and oohing and aahing at each other's works and being inspired. And yeah, it's actually been a really fun side of it.
Yeah, no, I think that you know, if there are silver linings to this thing, that's one of them in the stitching world is it's opening doors and connecting people more than ever before and making operations such as yours a more global than ever. And because every, you know, every organization such as yours has its own unique set of pieces of work and information that comes from a different part of the world, different perspective. And to make that more readily available, there's a phrase for you, you know, make it readily available to people all over the world is just a huge plus for the stitching community.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's just great, and I think that if anything good is going to come out of it, certainly for stitchers, it's going to be that, other than just a lot of extra time to stitch.
Yeah. It's been fun chatting to people, and with our big August exhibition that we're going to reopen on is an exhibition of Italian embroidery.
Yeah,
Remembrance of Carmel.
Yeah, I got to know. I got to know about this. This sounds fascinating.
So we actually, our building is in a very historically Italian community of Sydney. And so every year there's a huge Italian festival. You've got a lot of Italian families and restaurants, and that's sort of the area that we're in. And so we sort of thought that since August is always the big Italian month, we'd do an exhibition of Italian embroidery. And obviously this year the festival won't go ahead, but there'll be a whole bunch of different, as in the big community festival, but there'll be lots of Italian events. So we're sort of doing it as part of that. And it's been fun. I've been chatting to the ladies at Giuliana Ricama in Italy with their magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to send out some copies because they've now got an English edition, which is fantastic.
Oh, just a minute. All right. So this is called what? Giuliana?
Giuliana Ricama. It's the big Italian embroidery magazine. And even though it was Italian, we used to get it because it was just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And literally as of this year, they've started publishing it in English. So they're going to...
All right, hang on, April. All right, spell it for me.
I need to look. It's Giuliana, G-I-U. Hang on. My Italian is not as good as it ought to be.
I don't have any, so you're ahead of me.
there we are. G I U L I A N A, and then that's one word, and then Ricama, R I C A M A.
R I C A M A.
Yeah, Ricama.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
So it's spelled global, you know, sort of, you know, chatting to Italy and being like, oh, great, what are you working on? You know, they're going more global, you know, translating into English. So it does feel a lot more international in some ways. And so, putting together that exhibition at the moment, and we've got, you know, just trying to get a really nice broad range of different Italian needlework styles. One of our members, Effie, is a sort of world expert on Castel Guidi embroidery. And so she's got a lot of pieces from there. We've got, you know, Bargello work, we've got Assisi, all that kind of, all those different styles. So we're having a really enjoyable sort of exhibition, I think, just the kind of, looking at all the different variety of stitches in the Italian embroidery tradition. So, we're looking forward to that. It'll just be a great fun month, really.
How would you classify Italian embroidery? More lacy, more frilly?
Surprisingly not. There's a lot of sort of, cut work sort of pieces, which I suppose is sort of lacy. But, you know, the Assisi work is quite rigid. The Bargello work is, again, sort of on a grid form, even though it is a sort of lace style.
Yeah.
Bargello, I'm having a blank there. I'll come back to it. There's some nice pops of color. But I think as well, a lot of it, you can see how it would have been used in, you know, the ecclesiastical, there you go, that's my word I'm stumbling on, tradition, altar cloths and that kind of thing.
More of that orientation then.
Yeah, and it's quite regional as well. You know, you get stuff from Sicily versus work from Venice or Genoa, and there's definitely regional variations. And towns have their own needlework tradition. I mentioned Castel Guidi earlier, which is one town, and like that is their stitch. No one else has it.
Oh.
it's very Italian in that respect, that they love their regions.
Now, is there a lot of white work or unique coloration?
Yeah, there is a fair amount of white work or stitching on white linen. It's definitely, I think, their traditionally, I think that's sort of the habit they're in, and we'll definitely see a lot of that in the exhibition. Some gorgeous tablecloths, again, cut work, white work on linen.
Yeah, and that was the other question, because somebody we worked with, Krista West, who her company is Avlia Mediterranean Designs, and they all are aimed at being very functional. Placemats, runners, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so is Italian work a lot of that where it's made to be functional?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that Mediterranean influence, you see that in Italy very strongly, of course. So, I'm sure there's a lot of parallels there.
Mm-hmm.
Curtains, runners, all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful pieces by themselves, but still very functional.
Exactly. And of course, a lot of the pieces that we've inherited or have in our collection are pieces that were part of, you know, someone's dowry when they came out to Australia from Italy. And so they are all very, you know, functional household pieces, beautiful, beautiful work, but very much with that functional purpose.
Yeah. And see, that's the cool thing about you guys. You get that kind of contribution from all over the world, people who come to Australia like that. That's got to be so much fun.
Similar to the States, I think, you know, yeah, huge international communities, and everyone brings their own stitching traditions, which is great fun.
Yeah. And so, all right, so that's the August one. And we'll have a book for that we can purchase?
I'll put together a PDF with pictures of the work and, you know, explanation of what the technique is, and I'll can mail that to people, or I'll put a link to it on our website.
Oh, excellent, excellent, because I want to learn more. Yes. And then now September is a secret garden.
Yes. So that's two artists from down in Canberra, so our capital in Australia. And they've got some beautiful machine embroidery work. It's Sharon Peoples and Belinda Jessup. So you can look them up on Instagram, or there's some work we've put on our Instagram of theirs. And they've just got these gorgeous floral gardening gloves that sort of are, they are, like lace work, they're see-through, and so they'll cast beautiful shadows on the wall. They're bright and springtimey, and just Yeah, gorgeous.
So now that exhibition, you say there's a workshop with it. So, and I'm looking for people who are not in Australia. How can they participate?
Yeah, so that will be a workshop on site, probably one of our first ones that we'll have back at the gallery, because we're allowed to do that again. And so, yes, we're running a 2-day workshop, creating it's a garden piece, but it's a they're leading you in the creative process. So it's not a set design. It's a let's all discover and much more of an organic workshop, I suppose you'd call it, which is appropriate for the garden theme.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Good tie-in.
Yes, exactly. So yeah. that should be good fun.
And then in October, Jillian Benke, is that right?
Yes. Yep. Again, she's Benke on Instagram, and she creates these gorgeous little embroidered creatures. I think she started doing it when she was working in Paris and picking up scraps and odds and ends from the couture, you know, workshops and floor. And they're just charming. They're quite quirky, but yeah, charming little embroidered creatures. Again, we shared one on our Instagram the other day. And so she will be exhibiting with us in November, which I'm very excited for.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like fun. So in October. Yeah.
So October. I know my dates. Yeah.
So is that kind of, is that more along the lines of stump work?
There is some stunt work, I think, in it. I don't know. There's a lot of techniques actually going into the work she does. Mm. And, you know, just to sort of apply them quite
very unique.
Thematically. If you look her up on Instagram, it's Benke, Benke. So she's from Newcastle, just north of Sydney. And you'll see that, you know, there's French knots, there's a lot of beading happening, some really interesting techniques.
You intrigue me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're these little creatures mounted on wood, and you just sort of want to have one as a sort of, you know, I don't know, household deity or something like that. Very pagan of me.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Well, you know, it's okay. Now, and then November. Now, one of my favorite interviews was with Margaret Lee.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Holy smokes. that woman and her talent, I'll tell you what. So so we have an exhibition to celebrate her new book then.
Yes, exactly. So that was going to happen in April, but we were fortunate that we were able to reschedule it. So the November exhibition is called A Silk Road to Sydney, Chinese Embroidery in Australia. So we've got Margaret, pieces from our collection, and another artist who are obviously Australian Chinese embroiderers, embroidering in the with traditional techniques, but often looking at more Australian content. So we've got kangaroos and Australian wildlife images, but done in the traditional techniques. So that will be really good fun. And Margaret Lee's new book is The Art of Chinese Embroidery 2. And that's coming out now. And so we'll have her at the gallery, and we'll do a book launch and, you know, have signings, and Margaret will give a talk, which will be good fun. So it'll be a really nice kind of introduction for people into the history and the techniques of Chinese embroidery, which I think not everyone's game enough to try. You know, I think you look at it and it's so fine that it becomes a bit overwhelming almost.
Yeah, you're level 9, right?
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah, right, yeah, I figured you were by now.
You look at her books and they're so beautifully laid out. Like, they're works of art in themselves, really.
Yeah.
But the instructions are so clear and, you know, you sort of start to think, oh, maybe I could, you know.
Yeah, maybe we could, I tell you. I've said more than once, I would love to try it, but only if I knew that I could sit down for extended months and truly focus on it, because I don't think it's something you can just drop in for a couple hours a day.
No, it's the ones that get me are the double-sided embroideries, you know, which are like immaculate on both sides, which is certainly never the case when I stitch. it's insane. Some of the artists, they'll tell us how long a piece took and how many thread colors are used. And like, it is like months and months of almost full-time stitching to get one small piece and you're like, far out.
Yeah.
But maybe now's the time to try it in lockdown, Gary.
Yeah. Well, it really is for me, because I love that precision. That's what I just love, having it be exactly right and having the time and the tools and the techniques to do it exactly right. And that Japanese stuff is just so perfect.
It's
everything.
It's just gorgeous. Exactly. It's like you can see the brush strokes of the paint, which doesn't exist, but it is just incredible. So I'm looking forward to just, it's great fun for me. I get to have them all up on the walls in the gallery. I get to see them every day. It's very enjoyable.
Now, where is Margaret? I don't remember. Does she live in Australia?
She does. She lives down the south of the country. So not super close to Sydney because we're all very spread out around here, but it's pretty easy to get around. Hopefully flights will have recommenced by November. Yeah. You can travel domestically a little bit now, which is good. So it'd be nice to have her back at the gallery and everyone's very excited about it.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. No, I talked to somebody a couple weeks ago who was working on Japanese embroidery and had torn apart a whole thing that she'd done. And, why? Well, it just wasn't spot on perfect. And so it had to come apart. And
wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but see, for me, that's to strive for that kind of perfection and then, and then occasionally reach it. To me, that's just a real sense of satisfaction. It really is.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'll tell you, just every time Chinese embroidery shows up in a picture or live, I just stand there, I'm sure, with my jaw on the floor because it just, it's just amazing.
And it's one of those embroidery styles because people often, they throw shade on embroidery. You get the kind of, oh, is it a craft? Is it an art? And people, I think, question that. But I think it's one of those styles that's just so undeniably an art form and people are so gobsmacked by it that it's quite fun to kind of whip it out occasionally and just be like, this is what embroidery, is. Everyone stand back and applaud.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. You call that anything other than art and you just need to leave the room. Yeah.
And I think I said it last time, it's great having the gallery space because, when you frame things in the context of a gallery, people are kind of more accepting it. Oh, it's art, I'm in a gallery, I can purchase a work, and, there's kind of just that headspace for it. You can appreciate it that way.
Yeah. Do you sell the works that you show?
Sometimes, yeah. Often artists will sell work. Some exhibitions, internal ones, we won't sell pieces, but we definitely do. Sometimes we'll source pieces from collectors. So for the Sample Festival, we had lots of, 17th, 18th, 19th century pieces as well for sale, which was great fun, actually. People get to go home with a piece.
Oh, yeah, that's great. What percentage of your exhibitions come from your own possessions?
It depends on the year. Sometimes we'll have an exhibition that's almost wholly from our collection, but more often we'll piece it together and include works from our exhibition. So, for instance, for the Festival of Lace that's coming up, we have a number of pieces, a very large lace collection, but also we've got individual collectors who have perhaps better examples than we do, so we'd use that instead. Also, the Lace Guild obviously has an amazing collection, so getting some stuff from them. And so it's sort of, you're piecing it together, always trying to find the best examples of each to put on display.
What's the process, say, for instance, the lace thing, where you're using a lot of outside sources? Do you just put out the word to your list of sources and say, we're putting this together, I'm looking for these things, and then see what comes in? Or do you identify pieces and go out and try and convince people to lend them to you?
A bit of both. So, for samplers, for instance, I put a call out for our members because I knew a lot of them had them hiding in their, kitchens and living rooms. And I was like, right, so who's got samplers? Love to hear about it. Whereas, and I also found collectors and I said, hi, love to come see your collection and include things in the exhibition. Whereas for lace, I decided we'd go through what the guild has. I'm trying to put together a very comprehensive overview of lace styles. So literally, you know, every single style of lace. And my gosh, there is a lot of them. You know, write down the list and be like, what have we got that matches up with all of these? Where are the gaps in our collection? And then go out and find examples of those from collectors or other sources.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they'll pull something out that's better than what you have. And you're like, oh, I have to include that now. And people will call you saying, I heard you were doing this. I have this. Are you interested? A lady got in touch with me who has created a series of lace kangaroos.
Okay.
Full size kangaroos, and they're covered in different lace patterns. And so they're gonna drive up for the exhibition and recline on the floor in their Australian lace glory. So things pop out of nowhere as well, which is, you know, part of the fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So you have a base in that the exhibit is going to be at least this much. And then
Exactly. Let
the rest happen and see what you can do to enhance the overall presentation then.
Exactly. So, you know, someone who was speaking at the conference as part of the Lace Festival, Lindy Dwin, she creates big scale lace installations for sort of public artworks. And so we'd been talking about her speaking at the conference, and then she suggested, hey, what do you think of me doing a lace installation around the neighborhood, some big like external pieces to go outside your building down the front. And of course that was, you know, all over that. And so, you know, now she's working with our local council and there's going to be lace all around the neighborhood. And so, you know, these things just sort of grow out of the idea and, you know, and get completely out of hand in a great way.
Yeah. But what a great thing that, I mean, it just makes it even much more of a draw than just having it in the gallery there.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna sort of, you know, catch you in our lace webs around the neighborhood and bring you in. But I think again, it really, you know, catches people's eye and they think, oh wow, this is not what I think lace is. You know, this is actually quite fun and quite cool. And then they can come into the gallery and they can learn a lot more about it, the history and the varieties that you see.
Yeah, isn't that the truth though about lace? If you just go through life, just kind of a normal life, and you you have a concept of lace, and then if you actually look at it, you realize you don't even have a clue.
It's incredible. I don't have a background in lace. My background is history, and so I've been doing a deep dive into lace to put together all the panels and for the exhibition. And I think it's quite good being an amateur actually, because you realize how complicated it is, but you can also explain it in a way that makes sense for everyone else who's also sort of approaching it for the first time and being like, okay, let's talk needle lace, bobbin lace, let's get the basics down and then all the breakdowns within that. But it is a bit overwhelming. There's just so much in the lace world, and I'm constantly learning and finding new things.
Now, part of this festival, do we also have workshops and classes?
Yes, all of the above. So we've got workshops on machine and lace. It's a very contemporary sort of lace portraits. We've got very traditional needle lace for all the embroiderers who'd like to have a go at that as a weekend workshop. But we've also got some half-day classes and taster classes for beginner's lace making with bobbin lace. Because again, that's definitely something that is quite overwhelming. You know, you see a lady doing it and there's 1,000 bobbins and you're just like, whoa, yeah. I'm never going to reach that. So you don't start. And these are 2-hour taster classes that we're going to have throughout the festival. And, you know, literally it's, you know, sit down with your 5 bobbins, let's get going. And I think it'll be a really good sort of, even if you don't intend to follow it through, just to get that kind of your head around, you know, how is lace made or how can lace be made, which I think will be really good fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. My frequent co-host Arlene Cohen does bobbin lace.
Oh,
and, I got to visit her, in New Jersey where she lives one time, and she brought her, current, bobbin lace project. Cause you got to explain to me how this works.
Oh yeah.
And it's really simple. You know, it's everything's in pairs and you just do this and do that. And I watched and I asked questions, and when I got all done, I have no idea how you keep track of all that. I just don't know. But she does beautiful work. And I think it's just one of those things. Once you grasp the concept, it just makes sense and you just go. And
again, you know, definitely another art form. But yes. one of the things I've been enjoying as well as looking into the techniques and the sort of, you know, practical side of lace, I've been looking at, you know, the history of lace making, and because that sort of, it lends itself to it. One style come from here, so you sort of end up going down a bit of a research hole. But one of the things I've discovered and I thought was fantastic was that a lot of convicts sent to Australia were lace makers.
Mm.
Because they were part of the, you know, they were professional lace makers, and then all their jobs became replaced by machinery, and so a lot of them joined the Luddite movement, you know, started destroying factories, all that kind of stuff. And of course that's a big no-no according to the government. And so they were transported as convicts. These sort of angry lace makers all ended up in places like America and Australia.
Now there's a group, Angry Lace Makers.
Angry Lace Makers. I know. Let's start the Instagram page.
Yep. We're the Angry Lace Makers of Australia. Look out. Yeah, that's interesting. So then that
is,
that art gets to continue on. It's just they're just mad about it. Yeah.
They're just mad about it. Exactly. Yeah. They're doing it begrudgingly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So that's in February. And then we skipped right over your summer school. What does summer school in January mean?
Oh, yeah. That's our yearly summer school. It's we've got sort of 2 weeks of full-time workshops. I think we've got three workshops every single day in the workshop spaces. And I think we mentioned last time, we're quite spread out as a guild. We've got, you know, members quite far away in the country, all around the state, and even interstate. And so people will all come for the summer school. They'll stay at the local hotel that's just across the road. So it's a bit of a party atmosphere and, you know, going out for dinner together. And we have a great lineup of tutors from around this year around Australia, because we normally would have international, of course, as well,
right.
But
yeah.
Not this time, I suspect. But again, we've had the time to put together such a fun lineup of workshops, some traditional, some contemporary. And yeah, it's a good party, really. And there's, you know, for all levels, you know, there's definitely introductory or, you know, beginner kind of ones. And then there's, I can't even touch it. It's, you know, incredibly detailed work. So we'll release those probably in the next few months. And that's our big January kickoff. And then, of course, following that with the Lace Festival in February and the Lace Conference, it'll be a busy start to the year for us.
I guess. All right. Now help me. What of all of these things, how much of this is available online so people, for instance, you know, obviously in the States can participate? What is available to them?
So summer school is very much in-house courses. But I am really hoping to, for the Festival of Lace, try to make a lot more of that available online. So again, putting together a catalogue of pieces that appear in the exhibition, but also and I'm still working on this, I'd love to put together the recordings of all the speakers in the conference weekend. So that's a full 2 days lace conference. And we've got one day on the history of lace and one day on the future of lace. And really interesting speakers. So I'd love to record that and release it as a podcast or on our website. And so that would definitely be something for the internationals. But that will be a really a great weekend. So I'd love to make that available to as many people as we can.
Oh, that'd be tremendous. Yeah. And then these other exhibitions, how many of them will have some kind of a publication for them?
Probably a significant number of them. Especially the ones, interstate artists will put together a catalog because the works are available for sale. So people, you know, people who are interested in buying work like to get catalogs to see, you know, what's available. So, we'll be putting together catalogs for the exhibitions, at least for the next 6 months or so to make them available.
Excellent, because that's, you know, we gotta be able
also
to tap
the Instagram.
Into that.
We're very good at the Instagram, and every day I'll be posting something from the exhibition, and I normally try and get sort of a close up or something, so you get a really good look at the stitching and a bigger photo. So if you follow our Instagram, which is gallery76_QueenST Queen Street, we'll always be posting content from the exhibitions on that. So that's a good way to just kind of, you know, keep in the loop and enjoy some gorgeous works.
Yes, no doubt about that. Yes, that's one to follow, folks. Get her on your list there. That's right. Wow, that's exciting. So you guys are moving and quickly. This is
yeah,
great.
always moving. Nice to have a bit of downtime at the moment, but yeah, it feels like next year is going to be busy and exciting, and it's really nice to have that to look forward to now.
Yeah, that's great. All right, now we've had this downtime, and of course you've been sitting around twiddling your thumbs every day. So have you been able to do any stitching? I know you haven't. I know you haven't had thumb twiddling time. So I'm just.
No, apparently not. I know. It sounds like I'm really busy, but not a great deal. I mentioned to you that I got married a month ago.
Yes.
So I spent a good few weeks. I bought meters and meters of a beautiful sort of braid for my wedding dress to stitch on, and I sort of flippantly thought, oh, it's only braid. It won't take me very long. A few days.
Oops.
2 weeks later, my mother and I are still like frantically stitching it on in time for the wedding. So I did a lot of stitching, actually.
Did you get it done?
I got it done. It looked great. And yeah, I'm taking a break. I'm resting on my laurels now.
There we go. Yeah. All that work and now it's hanging in a closet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But for that day, beautiful. Yeah. So what did you do? Take a wedding dress and then embellish it? Was that what you're...
Yeah, exactly. It was just a tulle skirt, lace bodice, very simple. And then there's a wonderful shop in Sydney called Saigon Fabrics, and they sell sort of fabrics and trim for couture and sort of fashion. You know, if you want to get a dress made up, go to them for the fabrics.
Yeah.
And they're very, very lovely. And I knew they had a whole upstairs section of wedding dress lace and fabrics and trim. And I found the most beautiful beaded trim. And they helped me pin it on the dress and sort of design it so it all sort of grew up through the lace. So yeah, ladies there are wonderful, but it's an excellent shop to snoop around in and, you know, just gush over fabrics.
Well, that's great. So you really had a unique wedding dress then. That's great.
Yeah, very, very unique. It was good fun.
Yeah. So that was a month ago. Okay, then I understand. You haven't done any stitching, no.
No, exactly. No. Just settling back into new life now.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to go through that whole adjustment. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Bit strange, but everything's strange at the moment. So you just sort of roll with it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. April, so much fun once again. Thank you.
So great. Thanks for chatting with me, Gary. It's nice to hear what's going on with you guys. And it's great sort of just keeping in touch with everyone via your podcast.
Yep. Well, we'll make a point now to keep up with these exhibitions and the catalogs and all the things. And, I'll try and remember to encourage people to participate there and make the most of that because it's,
that'd be great. I'll send you the links to things that we've got going so that you can make them available to anyone interested.
That'd be great. Yep. All right, April. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.